turn to the book of Jeremiah, Jeremiah chapter number 10, Jeremiah chapter number 10. We have, for many, many weeks now, this is actually week number 32, we've been talking about the subject of relationships. An awful lot of relationships in life. There are a lot of relationships that we are a part of, and we've talked about maybe not a what we would call a specific relationship, like a mom to a son, or in some cases we just talked about our general behavior in our relationships. Tonight, that may be a little more so the case. Look at Jeremiah chapter 10. Why don't you stand with me real quick, and I'm going to read, starting with verse number 17, I'm going to read through verse number 19 to you. Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 17, it says, "Gather up thy wares out of the land, O inhabitant of the fortress. For thus saith the Lord, Behold, I will sling out the inhabitants of the land at this once, and will distress them that they may find it so." Now verse number 19 is the text verse for tonight. It says, "Woe is me for my hurt. My wound is grievous, but I said, Truly, this is a grief, and I must bear it." I'm going to use that verse, and I want to talk to you tonight about your relationship with hurting people. Your relationship with hurting people. And let's pray. Father, bless us now. Your presence is so, so important. God, we're about to teach your book. And we want to teach your truth. We want to teach it in your way. Oh, thank you for the way you meet the need of hurting people. And might we tonight, Father, as Christians, grow and be more sensitive and more capable of helping the hurting. And bless us now with thy presence. May my voice be in submission to you. And then, Father, may our ears be in submission to you. That combination, it seems, would be unstoppable if the preacher's voice and the listener's ears were both in submission to thy spirit. We would leave here tonight having heard from heaven. May that be the case. Please take this short and simple lesson, but multiply it into being something very productive in our lives, please. And we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Have a seat there if you will. You know, one of the main purposes of a church and its ministry is to help the hurting people or help brokenhearted people. It's been said, he who preaches to the brokenhearted will never want for a congregation. I don't think there's ever a time when we would have a church service that there is not somebody sitting in these seats that has not recently had a heartbreak. And life is tough, and life is hard. And with that in mind, there is a right way to relate to people who are hurting. Behind most faces, there is probably a hidden broken heart. I don't think we all walk around with a broken-hearted look on our face, but there are many people that have broken hearts and many people that have hurts in their lives. And people hurt for a variety of reasons. We hurt because of our failures. We hurt sometimes because of our backslidings. Maybe we're being attacked or we're being criticized. Children, you need to understand when you misbehave, that sure can break mom and dad's heart. When there are relationships problems, people hurt, and financial struggles causes people to hurt, and losses in life causes people to hurt, and shattered dreams and mistakes, sins committed, and the reaping process that we go through because of it, all those things can hurt. They can break our hearts. And so, as Christians, we should want to have a proper relationship with hurting people. There is a right and a wrong way to behave toward and around hurting people. Know this, we are to help to improve the spirit of that hurting one. We are to help to we're to help their spirit, not hurt it, and we're to help to encourage their heart, not to discourage it. And I think sometimes some sincere Christians are not wise in how they approach in their attempt to express their concern and love for somebody that maybe is going through a heartbreak. Just this week, there was someone that knew me, and they're not from here. They're from a distant state, and it's somebody that would consider themselves my friend. They felt like somebody had been mean to me out there in La La Land or wherever, and they called me and asked if they could talk to me for a couple seconds. Now, first of all, I didn't know that somebody out there in La La Land was upset with me, so I was doing fine until the person called to comfort me about that. And I just have to tell you, they were as sincere as they could be, but almost everything they said made it worse. You ever get around that situation where their whole intent was sincerely to comfort, and you walk away discouraged and down and out? And you know, it's almost like you don't go to the doctor, because if you do, you're going to find out there's something wrong with you, and you were doing fine up until that moment. But our relationships with people who are hurting, I think it's an important thing. There is a right and a wrong way to handle yourself around hurting people. Now, I think many of you, most of you, probably already know what I'm going to teach tonight, but it probably wouldn't hurt if I just taught it anyway. You might pick up a few hints along the way. In the local New Testament church, one of the things we do is we try to help hurting people, and we're supposed to try to help hurting people. We're supposed to try to encourage hurting people. And I believe that there are sincere people that go to help the hurting, but they sometimes do it in a way not realizing that they might be discouraging someone just because they're not handling their encouragement properly. My points will be simple. I don't think I'll be long, but if you'll listen tonight, I think I can show you some things that you can do to help people that are hurting or help people that are brokenhearted. First of all, if you want to have a right relationship with someone that's hurting, your pride must be under control. Your pride. Psalm chapter 10, verse number 2 says, "The wicked in his pride doth persecute the poor." In other words, someone's down, but a wicked person in their pride, they could actually begin to persecute that poor, the one that has less, the one that maybe is suffering at the time. So I would recommend this in regard to our pride. If we want to help hurting people, we should not be passing judgment on the person that is hurting. Do not wrongly take the attitude that their hurt is judgment from God. Now, so you know, it may be that God is correcting them. It may be that God is disciplining them. But God didn't leave you in charge of that. And you don't know that for a fact. And I've often through the years felt like we can take a wrong approach to a hurting person because we pass judgment on them. And we decide that they've done something, as a result of that, this bad thing has come upon them. And that's not always true. For instance, Job was hurting, but he was hurting in the will of God. And the truth of the matter is, if you all know it, Job went down in history to teach us all how to suffer, which means that Job was suffering so you and I could learn from it. So God, in his infinite wisdom, and the way God chose for it to be, is God said, "Job, you're going to have a heartache and you're going to have a heartbreak." But I don't think it was necessarily because of something that Job did. It was because God needed someone to go through a heartache or a heartbreak to show everybody how it's done and they could learn from it. And so if someone, and they did in a little while, I'll mention that again, but there were people at that time that passed judgment on Job when Job was hurting and having a heartbreak. And in their pride, they were making it into an issue between God and Job, and that wasn't the case at all. So I think if you want to help the hurting, you must have your own personal pride under control. You'll never have a right relationship with hurting people until your approach is truly sincere and an approach of humility. Again, Jesus was hurting. You do realize at one point in Jesus' life, people had forsaken him, and he had been physically hurt and lied about, and all sorts of things happened to him. And he didn't do a thing wrong. But there were even people back then that were judging him about what they perceived to be the reason he was going through what he was going through, and they were totally wrong. So, in regard to your relationship with hurting people, I would recommend, first of all, that your pride must be under control if you're going to sincerely help them. Secondly, my experience is this, that you should treat the hurting person as normally as possible. Treat them as much normal as you can. In Philippians chapter 2, verse number 1, it uses the words comfort of love. Comfort of love. Now, when someone, when failure or backsliding, or maybe they're being attacked, or they're being criticized, or they're going through a struggle or a loss, or because of a mistake or a sin, or whatever it is, whatever has brought their hurt or their heartbreak on, I think they want to know that you love them, but I don't think they want to be singled out about the mistake or the hurt or the setback. So I say treat the hurting person as normal as possible. They need to see nothing has changed in regard to your love for them. They need to see that you feel the same about them as before. And this is accomplished by treating them the same as before. I think I was teasing about this in my Sunday night sermon of last week, and we were talking about getting visitors into the church. I told you we'll reach out to new people and lost people and get them into the church, but also when we're putting a little extra push on things, we're trying to regain some people that have fallen away. And remember, when someone has fallen away or fallen out of church and they walk in the back door, the way you greet them could make or break their desire to be here. I joked and I said, so somebody that's not been in church for months and months and months walk in the back door and you raise your voice and say, "Hey, look what the dog's drug in. Never thought we'd see you again. God bless you, brother. Glad you're here." At that moment, they're melting. And that's the very thing that they didn't want. You say, well, what do you do? Be normal. Now, for some of you, that's a real challenge. I'm expecting too much. But honestly, what you calculate it in your mind, and when somebody is hurt, and or if somebody's trying to come back to God, somebody's going through a loss, what you do is you treat them as normally as possible. Again, I think they want to know of your love, but they don't want to be singled out. Things are not normal for them, but they need to see that you are going to be a normal, stable relationship in their life. So too much attention can go too far. Normal is the key. I try my hardest when people are going through heartbreak, when it's self-inflicted or whatever the battle, whatever the issue, when they're going through that, I want them to see there is a normalcy between me and them. And they're watching that. And I think it's a part of helping and healing people. Remember, too much attention can go too far, and it singles out, and it accentuates the hurt. And that's not usually what they're looking for. They'd like to know that you're still intact and we're normal. We're not rattled. Love's still there. So I said, number one, your pride needs to be under control. Number two, treating the hurting person as normal as possible will make a great difference. Number three, it's not usually best to mention the cause of the hurt. It's not usually best to mention the cause of the hurt. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse number 17 says this, "The words of wise men are heard in quiet." The words of wise men are heard in quiet. Most of the time when someone's hurting, we do not need to visit the place of pain. They're trying to forget about that pain. They don't want someone to put that pain back out there right in front of them. We don't need to remind them of their hurt. Don't be careful mentioning the cause of the hurt, because I would say don't rip off an emotional scab. You know, if someone's been wounded, someone's hurt, or maybe they're in a battle, they're going through something, they're trying to get some healing, they're trying to get some normalcy. I mean, that's what they long for. And by the way, just go through a couple battles and you'll wish your life were back to normal. But if they're going through a heartache or a pain, and they're trying to heal, the last thing they need is to somebody to sincerely come along, grab the scab and rip it off and pull that pain out and say, let's take a look at this real quick between me and you. That's usually not what they want. You say, what do they want? They want to know that you love them. They want to know that things are normal. They want to see that there is a stability between you and them. So don't open that wound that has started to heal. And again, it's not usually best to mention the cause of the hurt. It's not usually best, and listen to this, it's not usually best to say, I heard. Do you know you could have heard, but you didn't have to say you heard? You just treat them as normal. Can I tell you something? When someone says, I heard, most people melt on the inside and say, oh. So, I don't know that it's usually best to say, oh, how terrible. They already know it's terrible. Their heart's broken. They're devastated. And it's almost like grabbing a hold of that little wound and pulling that healing off. And they've got to re-experience the hurt. And now they know that you know. And so there's a right and a wrong way to help hurting people. My pride needs to be under control. I'm not passing judgment. I'm going to treat the hurting person as normally as I can. I don't bring up the cause of the hurt. Don't take a hurt that they have pushed to the back of their mind and drag it out where it can be seen so you can connect with them. You understand what I'm saying? They wanted to get that away from them so they could survive it. They see you, you sincerely reach out, but if you're not careful, you drag right to the front of the relationship this situation that's hurtful. Now they got to deal with it again. There are people who have been through difficult times, and I can meet them, and we never have to talk about the incident, and I can help them through the incident. I know the truth. I know what happened in the incident, but I don't dangle the incident in front of them continually in my effort to reach out to them. Why? Because I'm trying to heal them past the incident. Did you know something? Their heart and their life is more important to me than me letting them know that I know what they did or what they faced. So, first of all, your pride needs to be under control. Secondly, you treat them as normally as you possibly can. Thirdly, it's usually not best to mention the cause of the hurt. Number four. Do not analyze the problem that caused their hurt. Do not analyze the problem that caused their hurt. In Job chapter 16, verse number 2, I think I alluded to Job earlier. Job was a man that was suffering, and he had three what I'd call so-called friends that decided to analyze what caused Job's hurt. And they were all three wrong. And here's, and I love this, in Job 16:2, let me give you the words that Job used to describe his sincere friends. He said, miserable comforters are ye all. Now that proves Job was a southerner, ye all. But he said, miserable comforters are ye all. His three friends, maybe sincerely, maybe not, I don't know, but I do know this, they approached Job in such a way while he was hurting that they didn't make him better, they made him worse. They opened up those wounds and they, and Job says, you come to comfort me and I'm in worse shape after getting your comfort than before with friends like that. Who needs enemies? See, nobody totally knows why anybody faces hurt. We don't know that. You don't know why your hurt has come. Nor do you know why somebody else's hurt has come upon them. Boy, there are times when I faced hurt, and I couldn't even figure out why I was facing the hurt. And you think you got one up on me? I'm living through it. It's my hurt. It's my experience. But could I just recommend maybe that we not spend all of our time analyzing the problem that caused the hurt? So Job had these so-called friends who actually hurt Job by analyzing his hurt. One of them said, "Your problem is, Job, you're not spiritual enough." Can I tell you all something? If someone's hurt, they already know they're not spiritual enough. I rarely ever meet anybody that thinks they're spiritual enough. Boy, if you've gone through a hurt, you start searching your heart real fast. And we say, you know, I could have done some things better. But Job had one friend that came to him and said, "Job, let me help you because I care about you. Your problem is you're not spiritual enough." I don't think Job needed his friend to tell him that. He already knew that. He had a second friend that said, "Your problem is you left the tradition of your father behind. Basically, you're not doing what you were reared to do. You're not following the teaching that your forefathers had given you." And I don't think any of us, anybody in here think that the good things that your parents taught you, that you followed them to the T? Probably not. None of us do. But this was another so-called friend that was being analytical about Job's hurt. And the friend did not help, but the friend hurt Job. And maybe he was sincere, maybe not, but he shouldn't have been analyzing the cause of the hurt. He should have just been loving his friend at that moment. His third friend said, "You're reaping for your sin." And again, maybe, maybe not. But God can deal with that, and God has a way of making sure that if someone needs to know that they're reaping, that they will know that they're reaping. See, I don't know that it's a friend's job to figure out why, but it's just a friend's job to be loving and thoughtful and cautious to make their spirit better and healthier, not worse and unhealthy. Simply learn to care in an appropriate way. I spend my life around hurting people. I know people that are in our area, and I know people all across this country, when they get hurt, they seek out someone who knows how to help hurting people. And it's not usually someone that puts it in their face, analyzes, tears them to shreds. It's somebody that learns how to care in an appropriate way. Now, if you want to help the hurting, you control your pride. If you want to help the hurting, you treat them as normally as possible. If you want to help the hurting, it is usually not best to bring up the incident that caused the hurt, and you don't revisit it over and over and over again. They're trying to get past it. If you want to help the hurting, you do not analyze the problem that caused the hurt. You analyze the hurt and care about the one that's been hurt. Number five, I would say that when you go to help hurting people, don't refer to other people's bad attitude toward the hurting one. Let me say it again. Do not refer to other people's bad attitude toward the hurting one. In Job chapter 6, verse number 24, it says, "Teach me, and I will hold my tongue." One of the hardest things for a Christian to do is just to shut their mouth. Shut their mouth. Now, you say, "I want to help someone." Well, if you want to help someone, I would be very careful referring in the presence of the hurting one to others who have a bad attitude about the hurting one. Don't refer to the other people who are being critical of them while they're going through their hurt. That's very hard on them. It's things like this. And some of you need to learn this. I think sincerely people try to help, but they say things without thinking. Folks, if you're going to help people, you must think before you talk. And sometimes you better not even talking. I would rather you say too few words than too many words. But if someone's hurting, they're going through a pain, whatever that pain is, a disappointment, a heartbreak, it's not wise for you in conversation with them to refer to other people that don't have a good attitude or a proper spiritual attitude toward the hurting person. You say, why? Because they're already beat up. Maybe it really didn't need to know that somebody else wasn't handling this properly. Let me give you some for instances. Now, I don't care what everyone else is saying. Okay? So, you know, when you say that to me, Brother Owens, I just don't care what everybody else is saying. I'm thinking, what is everybody else saying? But we can do that not thinking before we talk. How about this? I'm for you, even if the others are not. Which others? I didn't even know about the others. Listen. My analyzation of this point is this. Don't try to comfort by trying to convince them how good you are going to be to them. You have an element of pride in your comfort because you're saying, old Joe here is a jerk, but I'm not. Old Joe is not treating you right, but I'm going to. You are exalting yourself in an effort to call it comfort. You'd be better off not referring to old Joe at all. How about this? I'm on your side during the battle. What battle? How big is this battle? And I was trying to calm down and get past it. I want to heal and I want to go on. Last thing I need you to do is come comfort me and tell me about the battle and everybody hates me and everybody what they're saying about me and how bad it is. I didn't even know that. You came to help me. Now I need more help. Try this. Don't worry. I still love you. And so the others don't? If anybody's going to forsake you, it won't be me. The others are forsaking me? Now, folks, I've been through enough battles. You wouldn't believe some of the terrible encouragement I've gotten through it. And I'm thinking, oh my, why did you bring that up? I just got that out of my mind. When you refer to those type scenarios, you are multiplying the hurting one's anxieties. So you try not to go there. You say, well, Pastor, boy, it sounds like there's an awful lot of caution used when you're helping the hurting. Exactly. There is a lot of caution that's to be used. There is proper wording. There is proper approach. There is restraint. One of the reasons why a lot of people can't help the hurting to the degree that they need to is because they walk in the flesh and not in the spirit. You cannot behave spiritually unless you walk in the spirit. And that there's a bit of a challenge. You say, boy, doing all this sounds almost impossible. It is impossible for your flesh to behave this way. It is possible for you to walk in the spirit and behave this way. And so it's not just a visit with the Holy Spirit every once in a while. It's a daily walk with God. I help hurting people all the time. I don't try to make it worse. I try to make it better. I don't have to bring up the depth of the pain or the incident to help them through the incident. Now, so Jeremiah, if you listened earlier in Jeremiah chapter 10, verse number 9, I want to read the verse to you again, and I thought it was very interesting. It said, Jeremiah 10, verse number 19. It said, woe is me for my hurt, my wound is grievous, but I said, truly there is a grief, and I must bear it. And here I see someone, their heart is devastated, and their heart is broken. And they are having a mental conversation with themselves, saying, this is very grievous to me. And I've got to bear it. Well, I don't want to make their grief worse. I want to make their grief better. So I've got to get my pride under control. I'm not passing judgment. I do not know why they're hurting. It may be self-inflicted, it may not. But even to what degree is it self-inflicted? I don't think there's sometimes people do wrong and they suffer because of it, but I do not know that the full extent of the suffering has to do with their part. Again, it could go back to a Job scenario where God just said, sure, they did a little wrong here, but that's not the whole story. So I can't pass judgment. Secondly, remember, treat them as normally as possible. Thirdly, it's not usually best to mention the cause of the hurt. Number four, do not analyze the problem that created the hurt. Just love them because of the hurt. Job's friends went down in history for wrongly analyzing the problem of Job's hurt or the cause of Job's hurt. I said number five, do not refer to other people's bad attitudes toward the hurting. Number six, and this will be a very short point. Number six, use appropriate gestures of unsaid words toward the hurting person. There are appropriate ways of letting them know that you're for them, that you love them, that they have your support. In 1 John chapter 3, verse number 18, the Bible says, "Let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed." But in deed. Sometimes it's hard to figure out what words to use. How do you word it without hurting? How do you say something without saying the wrong thing? Have you ever found yourself there? You're just thinking, I want to make an expression toward them, but I'm afraid if I say anything, I could hurt. I could pull that scab off. I could touch the bruise, and I don't want to do that. Well, sometimes words do not have to be said. I can look at my wife in such a way that she knows that I love her. Matter of fact, I would recommend that every husband and every wife take the time on a regular basis to stare into one another's eyes long enough to say, "I love you," without saying any words. You see, we can't make eye contact like that, then you need to get your relationship straightened out. Words are wonderful. But there are expressions that God makes available to us, and you don't even have to use words. Sometimes it's just the touch of an elbow, maybe a little gift, a pat on the back, an embrace, but you make sure it's appropriate, the same sex. You don't need to go around grabbing everybody and just latching on to them. A smile the right way. A nod of love, a nod of approval, those things can go a long way. I can remember, and it, some of you, I don't know about as you were growing up, but in when I was in high school, I enjoyed all sports, baseball, basketball, football. I loved to run track. My best sport was lunch. Could have gone to the Olympics representing America in the lunch competition. But boy, some of you can remember the approval of your coach was a big deal to me. And it was just a really big deal. And when usually if I play hard. I play to win. I'm just put together that way. But boy, I can remember I had a coach, his name was Mr. Stanley, and he was a really good coach. I can remember playing ball, and I'd played my heart out, and it's into the fourth quarter. I was wore out, and the ball was to come to me, and it was an easy 15-foot jump shot, just like a foul shot. And there's only so much time left in the game, and the ball got to me, and I got spooked, I shot, and I missed. And I'm telling you, my heart broke. And the crowd were there to help me with that. You know, I'm hearing these boos. And I had played my heart out. That game, I think I had 27 points. I was a high point man on my team. And I had played my guts out. And I was ready to cry, Brother Jason. I was ready to cry. I was so disappointed. I looked over at my coach. And he went. And I knew everything was okay. He didn't have to say a word to me. I knew I had his backing. And I could hear some of my guys getting on me and everything. Now, his first signal to me was everything's okay, which, by the way, gave me the confidence I needed. Because they took that ball out, and the next thing I heard the coach say, get the ball to Owens. Get the ball to Owens. And I thought, oh, did I need to hear that? I needed them to want to let me try again. Now listen, you don't always have to say something. Sometimes it's the nod. Sometimes it's the smile. You know, sometimes it's the handshake at the back door that's got just a little extra pressure on it where there's eye contact made. You don't have to say, oh, I heard how bad it is. Oh, I'm with you, brother. We're going to make it through this. We are not, that is not the way to heal things. You know, and most of the time, pity parties are not healthy. We need to love one another and help one another. But again, using appropriate gestures of unsaid words toward a hurting person can take the place of searching for proper words that you cannot find. And sometimes when you're not good with words and you can't figure out what to say, a proper gesture can just help that normalcy, that moment of contact, to be reestablished where they're at ease. People that have broken hearts, that go into tough situations, and they know some people know, they come in the church, and they're just wondering how they're going to be treated. They're just wondering. If we can all learn to do this, that normalcy can be established. You say, but they've got hurts, they've got issues, they've got problems. I know. But we want to help them. We don't want to run them away. We don't want to hurt them. We want to help them. Let me go on. Number 7. Let me see how many points. Okay, we're getting close to the end. Number 7. Let the hurting person see you still have confidence in them. Let the hurting person see you still have confidence in them. Galatians 6:1 says, restore such an one in a spirit of meekness. We say, restore them to what? Well, we're trying to get them back on board, back involved, back to being productive, to be a part. So, let me review, and then I'll teach that point. Your pride has to be under control. Treat the hurting person as normal as possible. It's not usually best to mention the cause of the hurt. Don't analyze the problem. That can make it even worse. Do not refer to other people's bad attitude toward the hurting person. Use appropriate gestures of unsaid words toward the hurting person. And now, let the hurting see you still have confidence in them. In Galatians chapter 6, verse number 1, it says, restore such a one in a spirit of meekness. Someone's hurting. Let them help you with something. Let them help you do something. Give them a task so that they see that they're needed. Give them a task so that they can be used. That's a way to rebuild their confidence. Oh, and it may not be. Let's say that someone has fallen into deep, dark sin. And just so you know, all sin is deep, dark sin. Oh, but we have our pet sins that we've determined. These are the wickedest and the most vile of sins. So let's say that somebody's fallen into that. Now, it may not be that they'll be a deacon tomorrow because I'm trying to give them a responsibility. Now, there's common sense used in this, but I will tell you this. If somebody's still alive, there's something they can do for God. It might be minimal. And if there wasn't anything they could do for God, God would kill them. He'd just take them off the earth. So if they're still living, then there's something that God wants to use them for. And so if they're hurting and you want to help them, see if you can express confidence in them. And that confidence will re-energize, it will strengthen, it will encourage them. Don't put them in an embarrassing situation. You know, I think if somebody at church messed up real bad and people knew about it, I don't think I'd be bringing them up on the platform, you know, the service after that, and having them do something up here where they'd just be humiliated and freaked out about what everybody was thinking. But there are things they can do. There are ways for them to be involved. And that piece of responsibility, whether it's little or not, it will rebuild their confidence. Help them to serve, even in a small way. Help them to make some type of a contribution. And this is not to cause them pride, but it's to kind of help rebuild. You say, but they're a sinner. What do you think you are? Well, I don't think they qualify. You do? You do? You're good enough? You ought to take that up with the Lord. You just happen to know what they did. You didn't get caught. We can't see everything that went on in your mind. Everybody doesn't know everything about you, do they? So, listen, somebody stumbles, somebody's hurt, they're facing embarrassment, whatever it is, giving them something to do can rebuild their confidence. I think, you know, parents, well, this can be used with our children. Those of you that are leaders at work, somebody blows it, and there are really some people out there in the workforce that they're sincere people, and they blow it, and they're wondering, is my boss ever going to have confidence in me again? You may not be able to give them the very same task that they just messed up, but you can find something else to give them to do. You need to reestablish their confidence and rebuild them and invest in them and make them believe that they can. We live in a life where there's a devil that says you can't accomplish things for God, and you and I serve a God that says you can. You can do it. You can do right. You can rebuild. You can do something good with your life. And so I, when people have struggles, I try to find things for them to do. And they help me. And I want to rebuild their confidence. This reminds them that God still has a purpose for their life. It teaches them that God can still use them. And remember, if you're sucking air, God has a purpose for your life. You can still be used of God. And, no matter how many times we've been told it through the years, we hear about God's a forgiving God and that God will use you again and God's a God of a second chance. Man, when you get blown away with something in life, you sometimes have a hard time remembering that God is a God of a second chance and you're going to get another chance and God can still use you. And so it's good to have people that do remember that. People that can help you to be reminded of it so that you can be used again. So, your relationship with hurting people. Sometimes we sincerely try to help, but we quench their spirit just because of not thinking through what we're doing. And so, your pride must be controlled. You treat them as normal. You don't mention the cause of the hurt or the heartbreak. You don't analyze the heartbreak. You just care about the hurt. You don't refer to other people who have had a bad attitude toward the situation. You use appropriate gestures, even of unsaid words, toward the hurting person. You let them see that you still have confidence in them by helping them to share in the work, even if it's in a minimal way, but that they can be used again. I was a bit amazed. You'll not know who this is. It's a situation here at our church, but wouldn't do you any good to analyze it because you wouldn't figure it out. But there was a person that had been out of church for quite some time, and I'd been reaching out to them and trying to get them back in church. And finally, they came back to church, and I called them into my office, and I said, "Listen, I'd like to get your help with this little project," and they said, "Let me think on it." And I got a text about an hour later, and it said, I just wouldn't be able to help with that." I said, "Okay." About a week later, I reached out to him again. I said, "I got a little project I'd like to get your help with." And no response. And then it wasn't long until they said, I just don't think I'd be able to help with that." So after about 3 months of failed attempts, I cornered him one day at the church, and I said, "I have some things I want to get help with, and I'm trying to get you to help me, and I cannot seem to get your help." And they began to cry and said, "Pastor, I don't deserve to help." And I said, "None of us do." I said, "But I've been out of church, and you don't know the way I've been living." I said, "And I don't want to know. I just want you to get back in church, and we're going to help you, and I need your help." And they said, "Okay, if you're willing." I said, "I am more than willing." I said, "You know something? I feel the same way when I talk to God about my responsibilities. I just feel like I don't deserve to help. And God said, Jeff, all I have to use are sinners. And you know something? You would know who. But boy, they're in church more and more. And I'm watching the rebuilding taking place in their life. I don't need people. I'm not a priest. People don't have to confess their sins to me. I'll help them. And sometimes we go into what their sin might be so I can help them get victory. But I got to tell you, people, when they're hurting, you know, save people, they already are under conviction. They're already tore up, and they already see the devil has deceived and hurt. They need someone to gently get them through this phase of the healing process. Now, let me tell you this, and I'll be done with the lesson. Both leaders and followers need proper treatment in their times of hurt. Sometimes we may feel like, you know, the follower, and I don't know how you would rate this, but maybe the weaker vessel or the follower, but we really need to be cautious on how we treat them in their time of hurt. And I agree with that. But wait a minute, I got to tell you, leadership needs proper treatment in times of hurt too. I've been around some very, very strong and some very, very powerful leaders in Christianity. They can take on a certain air about themselves. Obviously, want everyone to know they're strong and they're capable and they can do it. And you'll hear preachers say, I don't care what anybody says. You're not going to bother me. If I could just tell on them for a moment, they do care what people say. And it does bother them. They're just trying to be strong. So be careful when you get around. You might think, well, he's a strong leader. So because he's a strong leader, you know, these things don't apply. Just so you know, they apply to everybody. When anybody's hurting, there's a certain temperamental air. You just need to be careful how you handle hurting people. Some hurting people can see certain folks coming and they almost want to run because those certain people can't keep their conversation out of the ditch. They walk away feeling worse rather than better. Now, if all you're doing is seeking sympathy, you might want people to cry over you all the time. But I've got news for you. That will not heal you. It will not heal you. It is an appropriate normalcy, knowing that a healing needs to take place. And if you've listened to what I've said tonight, I know it's simple. I know everybody probably knew everything that I just taught. But I analyzed how I help hurting people. There are people that sit in this room right now that hurt, and they hurt themselves. And I helped them through it, and we never talked about the specific because I didn't have to. They knew it. I knew it. I just want to help them. I love them. I get no glory out of knowing what they did wrong. I get no glory in fault finding. I just want problem solving. I want people building. And I'm not afraid to face issues. Whatever the issue is, if we got to dig into it, fine, we'll dig into it. Not afraid of that. But I want us to grow past it. And I think that's what God wants too. That's why he said that in that spirit of meekness, we want to restore them. So the lesson tonight, and we're finished, your relationship with hurting people. Let's bow our heads and close our eyes. Every head bowed, every eye closed. Let's all grow together. Let's learn to pick our words wisely, pick our emotions wisely, pick how we handle things wisely. If you are a strong, opinionated person, you're going to have to really work at this because your mouth can get ahead of your brain, especially can get ahead of your heart. Boy, there's just certain wordings and things that, and you say, well, I'm not sure I can use the right words. Then use the appropriate gestures. Sometimes better off saying nothing but just a smile and maybe a little gift of love. But who here tonight would say, Pastor, I think I can grow. I think I can better help hurting people as a result of what I've heard here this evening and God helping me. I want to live this in my life. I want to help my family and people around me and the other Christians. Would you raise your hand and let God see your hand? If maybe you've been encouraged, God bless you, and you can put those hands down. I want, as with our heads bowed and eyes closed, may I say to my congregation, the people that I love, I will do my dead level best to increase your spirit and help you through your times of hurt. Let's help one another that very same way. I want it so that when my preacher friends across the country are going through battles, I want it so when they see it's my telephone number calling them during the battle, I do not want them to be scared to answer their phone because of how I will handle myself. And for years, I think I've approached them in the right way. Sometimes it's just a call and I say, hey, brother, I love you. I love you very much and I'm praying for you. And that's it. It's not a 2-hour dissertation, analyzation. It's just I'm there to help you through the hurt. We're going to have an altar call. It won't last long. Some older brothers and sisters need to learn what you were just taught, because you can help younger brothers and sisters, and husbands can help wives, and wives can help husbands, and Christians can help one another. Leaders can help followers, and followers leaders, as we strengthen our relationship with hurting people. The pianist is going to begin to play. Let's stand to our feet with our heads bowed and our eyes closed. If you need a moment at the altar, you come. Guard your words when someone's hurting. Guard your words. Guard your attitude. Be cautious. We usually say too much rather than not enough. Ushers, if you'll have the prayer bulletin ready, we will, of course, take some prayer requests in just a moment. Those hurts to which we refer, some self-inflicted, some not. Some things that, hey, you know, you don't even know why someone is, you don't have to know why they're hurting, just care that they are. One more time through the song, and then we'll attend to some prayer requests.